The Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast with your host, Jackie Pilosoff.
No one should have to go through a divorce feeling alone and isolated. The Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast is a production of Divorced Girl Smiling, where every show is 30 minutes aimed to empower you, help you feel validated and understood, and connect you with some of the best divorce professionals in the industry. So grab a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and start smiling as you join us right now for the Divorced Girl Smiling Podcast. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found and always at divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Before we get started, I want to ask you a question. Do you want to secure the quality of life you deserve post-divorce? Do you want to avoid an overly complicated and high-conflict divorce? I'm sure you're answering yes. But what you might not realize is these things are so much more in your control than you might think. I want to introduce you to My Divorce Solution, which is a divorce preparation program designed to give you a personalized financial divorce plan, a faster, a much less expensive divorce, a more amicable divorce, and a fair and equitable outcome for both parties. My Divorce Solution doesn't take the place of your divorce attorney or your mediator, but what it does is it cuts their time by providing them with all the information they need to get you divorced quickly and fairly. And you can actually save up to 80% in divorce attorney fees by using this program. I truly wish this would have been available to me when I was getting divorced. So if you want to learn more, go to mydivorcesolution.com. You can also find them in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girl Smiling. I also want to take a second and highly recommend divorce mediator Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, who is also a CPA, is an accomplished business leader with extensive experience in people management and cross-functional projects that required him to often mediate and find the best path forward for people and teams throughout his long-time career. And Michael also became a divorce mediator because of his own personal divorce. It was highly litigated, and he's now driven to helping couples divorce in a much healthier way than he did. If you want to learn more about Michael, you can find him at michaelsmediation.com. And you can also find Michael in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girl Smiling. So I want to dedicate this whole episode to intimacy and sex in relationships. And I haven't done anything like this in a while. Why it's so important, I think, is because lack of intimacy and sex is a lot of the reason why people decide to get divorced. Lack of intimacy and sex is also an issue for people who are dating again after divorce and really scared of intimacy and sex because of their past. So it's a wonderful topic. I hope that you will learn a lot from this. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. And I have to say, I can't take credit for the idea. So the idea to do a podcast on this came from my guest. I want to introduce her. Her name is Sherry Morris. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Jackie.
Nice to see you as always.
It's a pleasure always to talk to you, Jackie.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Sherry is a divorce coach. I want to tell you a little bit more about her before we get started. So she is an attorney, but not practicing law anymore. Sherry, how long were you an attorney?
Oh, boy, it was a long time. I graduated from law school in 1991, so it's a long time ago. A few years ago, as I like to say. And I've been doing this for about 9 years now. So I practiced law for a long time before I turned to coaching.
Okay, but you were not a divorce lawyer.
I was not. And, you know, it's an interesting note. I went through my own divorce that informed my additional credentialing to do what I'm doing now. And, you know, when you practice in an area of law, you may do different areas at a given time throughout the course of a long career, which is what I did. And learning sort of the nuts and bolts of divorce is not really the tough part, right? It's how we apply it, which is also a reason for me not to practice law, but rather to do coaching, because I'm a big believer in collaborative processes when we can have them. figuring out if we can avoid divorce too when we can. So really what I wanted to do was broader than lawyering in many ways, which is why I became a parent coordinator, did some transformative mediation training, and tried to look at this from more angles, right? How can people relate whether they decide to stay married or get a divorce and take care of themselves and their kids?
All right. So I'm glad you brought that up because I want to tell my listeners, Sherry is a discernment counselor, which means if you're trying to decide with your spouse whether getting divorced is the right thing to do or trying to work it out, that is what you do in discernment counseling. Sherry is also a divorce coach for high conflict divorces, as well as divorces that are amicable. And she's also a parenting coordinator and also a yoga instructor. Anything else?
I think all of those skills are complementary. I love that you listed them all, but really everything I do now and everything I add to this is really another tool in my tool belt to do this work.
I just love it. All right. So like I told my listeners, you came up with this idea. Tell me why you thought it was important to talk about intimacy and sex in relationships. And when people think of intimacy, they also think of sex. Is there a difference? Tell me about that.
So the reason I wanted to talk about this, Jackie, I think it's really so important because whenever we talk to our friends, our family, right, when there are complaints in a relationship, when you start to dig down into what's going on, often intimacy is the first thing to go. Does that mean sex? Sometimes. Does it mean connectedness? Absolutely. So I think from my perspective as a professional, sex is a part of intimacy, but doesn't define it entirely. When I hear complaints from one partner that there's no sex, I'll ask about other intimacy and they say, well, without sex, there's not going to be any of that. But you see, when we drop one, we often don't get the other. And then the partner who may not be interested in sex isn't interested in intimacy because their needs aren't being met. So it becomes this vicious cycle. And I think the two are intimately connected, which is to say we can't drop one without having consequences for the other. I'll say something rather controversial, but I think it's important. If you're not having sex with your partner, they will likely be dissatisfied if sex is important to them. And ultimately, they may figure out another way to satisfy those needs. So many cases of infidelity I hear about are not the serial philanderers, right? It's people who became disconnected, became unable for whatever reason. And I'm not blaming the partner. I'm simply saying they became disconnected. And they start to look elsewhere to fill their sexual and other needs. And what that means is sometimes it's beyond repair then.
Okay, so I know a guy who cheated on his wife and ultimately ended up divorced. And he said to me, it wasn't the sex. That's not why I cheated. I was cheating because I just wanted a hug. I wanted to feel like somebody cared about me. I wanted to feel like somebody wanted to hold my hand or hug me or scratch my back or whatever. I'm not saying this guy was right for cheating. Yep. At all, and I'm not judging the wife who didn't want to have sex with him either. But I'm clearly trying to show Sherry's point that if you aren't having sex or other forms of intimacy, one person might seek it somewhere else. And so it's very important if you want your marriage or your relationship to work and be happy to nip it in the bud.
Yes. And I love that example. And let me say from the partner's perspective, like you said, you weren't judging the wife. I wonder what the power struggle was, which I think fundamentally often defines why intimacy is lost. There was likely, I heard one great couples therapist describe the dance that's done between people in a relationship. And we use and sometimes weaponize, unfortunately, certain tools in the relationship. So I wonder why she didn't want to touch her partner, right? Why was she angry or sad or hurt, right? Ultimately, those feelings that are deeper than the anger. And those are the feelings I want to catch and work on before we have the disconnectedness.
Okay, now where do these feelings come from? So when you're not having sex and when this woman doesn't want to touch her partner, I'm going to name a couple and then you tell me if you have some too, which I'm sure you do. So if somebody doesn't feel respected, or if a spouse is like mean to you or doesn't pay attention to you, because Sherry, do you agree with me that there are so many things that foster the sex and intimacy? And that's like if someone's thoughtful, if someone shows you they care about your job, they're listening to you, they're being kind to you, they're doing thoughtful things for you. Like so many men will say to me, my wife never wanted to have sex with me. Well, who wants to have sex with someone who's mean to them or who's disrespectful or who doesn't ever plan dates? So tell me about that. Is that where these feelings of sex and intimacy come from, all this other stuff? What's the stuff?
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. And I think now I see a lot of women in intimate partnerships that are failing because not only do they have to take care of still, even today in 2024, their work and the family, but they don't feel heard. So what you were saying about not being listened to is sort of the flip side of hearing them. Maybe they've asked, they've reached out to their partner, husband or wife, to say, I need you here. It's too much managing all of this without you. And maybe the partner even says, make me a list. Oh, well, that's exhausting. Why do you have to be in charge, right? And I notice a new generation, a slightly younger generation saying, yeah, this is a partnership. That doesn't work for me. I don't have to be in charge of it all because I'm not going to tell you what to do. So even if that's your dynamic and it seems to be working, I think it chips away at the essential intimacy because in a way, you're infantilizing that partner. You're telling them just like you would if you're their mother or father, how they have to behave. So even if you think you're showing up, well, I did what she or he told me to, it may not be enough. That's not intimacy, right? You really have to take on the stuff of your life. So whether you have a high pressure job or your job is to manage the house and the children, there has to be some crossover. It has to be a feeling that you're holding some of that for your partner, in my professional experience.
You're listening to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilosoff, and I'm your host. Today, I'm here with divorce coach Sherry Morris. Sherry and I are talking about intimacy and sex in your relationship, and we are going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the challenges of intimacy, the benefits of intimacy, and tips for couples who feel their relationship lacks intimacy. We're also going to get into some tips for those who fear intimacy for their next relationship. So we'll be right back. I want to talk about two divorce attorneys who I think are wonderful. One is in Massachusetts, and the other one is in Illinois. I'll start with the Massachusetts divorce attorney. Her name is Catherine Becker Good, and Catherine is the founder of the Law Office of Catherine Becker Good. She has been a divorce attorney for over 30 years. And what I love so much about Catherine is she's a wonderful listener. She's really warm and compassionate, but she's also extremely driven and experienced, and she truly is dedicated to helping people get divorced in an amicable way. And she has a really, really personal approach. Just love her. You can find Catherine at cbgoodlaw.com. I also want to talk about divorce attorney Tiffany Hughes. Tiffany is energetic, passionate, experienced. She's been a divorce attorney for over 18 years. And she is the founder of the Law Office of Tiffany M. Hughes. Tiffany is wonderful at mediating divorces, but she's also good if you need to be in the courtroom and have a litigated divorce. If you want to learn more about Tiffany, you can find her at thughueslaw.com, and you can find both Tiffany and Catherine in the Trusted Professional section of Divorce Girls Smiling. Welcome back to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilosoff, and I'm your host. Today, we're talking intimacy and sex in relationships. I'm here with 9-year veteran divorce coach, Sherry Morris. And Sherry, when you talk to couples and they say, like, we never have sex anymore, what are some of the questions you ask them?
I like to approach that question because, first of all, when people share really intense and personal details, I have hopefully created a space where they feel some trust. And when they feel like they can share that, I try to approach what's next with curiosity. Tell me what's going on. What's your story about that? Why aren't you having sex? And then I start to unpeel, right, the layers of that onion to find out what's really behind it.
So what if they say, like, I don't know, I'm just not attracted to him anymore. It's just kind of feels icky to me. And I don't want to even do it. I don't feel sexy. I'm not into it.
So that, I think, is really important because I do hear that from probably more women than men. I do like this sort of, on a more humorous note, this gender difference. You can have the guy standing in front of the mirror patting his belly saying, looking pretty good. And a woman will, you know, look fabulous and critique every body part. So, but having said that, it's actually rather sad. So sometimes in my experience, the women that I'm talking to do feel like they've gained weight in childbirth or they've lost their figure. They haven't had time to devote to it. So it does have to do with their self-esteem, right? And their feelings about themselves. It certainly doesn't help if they have a critical spouse, right? But most times I don't hear that. It's not a husband or partner saying, I don't like the way you look. It's just, please touch me, right? Please come to me.
I think women are so critical of ourselves, especially when it comes to aging. And, you know, you're like thinking, well, at least my husband, who I was married to, liked my body, I guess. He had seen me. Now I'm going to have to show it to a stranger. How freaking scary is that? And these are women of all sizes, ages, shapes. These are women who are a size 2 who feel this way, all the way up to someone who might be a size 18. It doesn't even matter. And what I hear from men is that if a woman's sexy, it doesn't even matter. They're not nitpicking at that 5 pounds that you think you need to lose. Women are so mean to ourselves about our bodies. It's kind of scary. I'm definitely included in that too. Like, I'll be like, ew, I look so gross.
Well, I think there are a lot of cultural reasons still, right? Not that, you know, it was intentional, but we're surrounded still in our society, right? The social media, everything. The messages to women and, you know, men to some extent now are still pretty, you know, body specific, I would say. So I also think, however, there have been studies done that what matters in relationships is your body confidence. So bringing a confidence to yourself is really what people find attractive. So whether you're in a long-term relationship, right, or a dating one, I think having the confidence of, yeah, my belly's not quite what I'd like it to be, and you get out there and you just pat it and go out into the world, right? Just like a man would. and recognizing that your arms don't have to be perfect. I think we do it to other women too, right? Intentionally or not. So really trying to build that body confidence. And there are lots of ways to do that now. And I think that's an important piece. So in a long-term marriage, when you hear people say, I'm just not interested in sex, I always am curious about how they're feeling about their own body. And then taking it incrementally from there, because usually it's less about the body, honestly, than about the anger. There's so much anger. And anger, of course, we know in the therapy world is a cover for that sadness and hurt. And so then we start to try to talk about that. So really the no sex, from my perspective, is a chance to dig deeper into what's going on between the two people. And usually, Jackie, it's a lot.
Such a good point. And I'll tell you, for women who are listening to this thinking like, oh, I just don't like my body. Well, look at your husband. Is he in perfect shape? So, I mean, listen, if you guys really love each other and you have this good relationship that translates into good sex. And honestly, the body and all that doesn't even matter. It really doesn't. And I want to bring up one more thing you said, Sherry, about how men are interested in how much a woman is confident about her body. I was talking to this guy one time and he was divorced and he said he was dating this woman and she was like a little overweight, maybe like 10 or 15 pounds, he said. which I think probably meant 20 because I think guys see it so much less than us.
Right.
Okay, so the woman and him, well, they went out, they had a great time, they went out a few times, and then they were going to have sex. And the woman was so self-conscious, and he kept telling her, like, I think you're beautiful. I love the way you look. You're so pretty. Don't worry about it. And she was so self-conscious that he said it ruined the sex and it was terrible because of her self-consciousness and how bad she felt about her body. So that should be a lesson. He probably like loved her. He didn't care. And that's what I'm trying to tell people. He doesn't care. So figure out what the reason is that you don't feel comfortable. Is it anger? Is it that deep hurt? Is it your lack of your own self-esteem? And then you can go from there. Okay, tell me what some of the benefits are of intimacy.
So I heard this great story on another podcast the other day when someone defined intimacy as when you look at your partner at a party and you're already creating the agenda for the debrief. And I love that because to me, that captures intimacy. And of course, it can be a friend too. But with your intimate partner, it's fun to say, hey, what were you talking about over there with so-and-so? And here I was over here. And after the party, you can relate and laugh and integrate that knowledge, right? So intimacy is the ability to have, I think, that touchstone, right? That person, you got your person. And I think what happens little by little, especially if you have children, right? You're pulled in different directions, have a lot of stress around money, and family, perhaps, that there can be little fissures in that. So really, their priority for this intimacy is keeping that number one. And they've always said that, haven't they? They told us that when we had children. Don't let them be number one. Make sure your spouse is number one. And that doesn't mean every day it's all about them, but it means at least every day thinking about your partner, thinking about how you're a team. So that team concept is incredibly important to intimacy, I think.
I love that. A team is friends, a team is parents, a team is lovers. And you're right. And once you have that bond with someone, it's very like, I don't want to use the word fragile. What's the word I'm looking for? You're so lucky and you don't want to lose it.
Yes.
So how and do you keep it?
Yes. And you're so right. Like you said, it's not so much that it's fragile, right? But it's also shifting all the time. So you have to nurture it, right? It's like anything. It's like our children, right? And it may feel more instinctive to nurture them. How are you doing? Even, you know, when they're teens and don't want to talk to us for a day or whatever it is, we're still going in. Why can't we do that with our partner, right? So we should is the answer. But I think it's easier to stay angry, right? To not keep trying, to focus on other things. But what I noticed, Jackie, and this is really critical, I think, to intimacy, a lot of times we have our own stuff going on. And one of the things we didn't mention, especially for women, are hormonal changes, right? Maybe your desire is different. Maybe stuff's going on pre and postmenopausally. But what's your stuff? What are you bringing to the table? So I always encourage everyone to look at themselves because it's so easy to project that stuff onto your partner. I mean, look, we all do it.
I love the part. Okay, I'm going to give a great example of what you just said. So my partner and I, we never fight, honestly. I know yes. People are like, oh, yeah, right. We really don't. I mean, we've had fights over the last 9 years that we've been together, but they're very infrequent, maybe three the whole time. So like a couple weeks ago, he woke up and did something to his back. And he is the kind of person, like, nothing is ever wrong. He's really lucky. He was being such a jerk that I was like, okay. So I said to him, I go, finally, after like a day or two, I go, listen, instead of being like angry and like, I'm actually starting to take this, like, you're being mean to me. And
yes. He was like,
oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't even realize it. I'm just so pissed about my back. I'm so frustrated. I'm in pain. But to have those words was really important instead of me just going, he's being a jerk. You know what? I'm just going to leave him alone until he decides not to be. I freaking called him on it.
Yes.
And said, like, why are you being mean to me? And he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Done. Now I understand it. And see, it's been 9 years. So that can happen anytime in a relationship. And like Sherry and I are saying, you have to hold it really sacred and like keep it. Because once it starts to shift too much into the non-intimacy way, sometimes you can't come back.
Well, you know, what I really noticed there too was how important it is to understand our style when something arises for us. Some people, you know, you read about attachment theory and what attachment style you have. And if you tend to be avoidant, I'm going to go away and not deal with my partner right now while I deal with what I'm dealing with. Or are you anxious? I'm going to chase after you and repetitively ask for what I'm not getting, what need I'm not getting met. And both can be true. And often we have one anxious person, one avoidant person. So when that bumps up against each other, you need to just know that's the case. And so if you feel someone's reaching out too much to get their needs met, ask what your role is. Are you avoiding it and why? And so we can work with that, but we have to understand it and hopefully have a healthier dynamic in the long run.
Okay, I want to get into people who are listening who are newly separated, going through a divorce, maybe just got divorced, and they're fearing intimacy in their next relationship. Why does this happen?
So obviously, Jackie, as we know, as grown-up women, we bring all our stuff, right, from all our previous relationships with us into the next one. And if you feel the experience you've had, even if it's been valuable, has been difficult, it can be hard to trust. Right? You bring your worries, and now maybe you have children as well. So you think about your partner in relation to the children. So I think it's simply that we have some wisdom and hopefully some maturity. So even if you're doing it right, it can feel scary.
It can feel terrifying, really. And I think that there's lack of trust. Like, let's say you're someone listening and your spouse left you. Well, how are you supposed to get naked with someone, go all in again, get really intimate? What if he does that to me in my next relationship? I don't know if I can survive that. And my answer is yes, you definitely can, but
you can. And let's pause there for 1 second, because I am not blaming that person whose spouse left, not in a single way, but it's a chance to be curious. When I see that dynamic and I'm working with someone to whom that has happened, I want them to talk about what happened in their relationship and do a deeper dive. We can't do anything about the spouse, right? And we may never even have them in our relationship, but we can do something about us. So if someone was dissatisfied with you, maybe having nothing to do with you, let's use that as a chance to investigate what we can do differently. Not better, not that we were at fault, but what wasn't working? And I always know that there are two sides to the coin, always, in all the hundreds of couples I've dealt with.
And also, what are the things you didn't see? What did you miss that you're going to look at next time around? You know, I want to say something else, though, to women listening and men, too. If you are fearing intimacy because you don't feel like you look good anymore. So many women, I can't even count, send me emails and say, I'm over 50. Who's going to want me? You have no idea how many people are over 50 and have met someone and are so happy. I know a woman who just met someone and she's 82. So, definitely it's there. But if you are fearing, like, I don't like my body, I look old, I would say there's certain things you can do that you can control. Obviously, you can't control your age, you know, but you can control how you feel. In other words, I would never tell someone, well, you should lose weight. No, you should be at a weight where you feel good about yourself. You should go to yoga so that you can stretch your body and relax. Meditate. Eat healthy foods for the purpose of feeling good. And the weight loss and the body or whatever, let it just correct itself. And all you can do is love yourself for who you are. Do healthy things for yourself. Be kind to yourself. And then let the rest fall where it is. And if somebody doesn't like it, fine. What do you think?
I love it. And it is scary and it can still feel risky. And some people will say no, but guess what? in being our best selves, we don't want to be with those people who say no. Ultimately, it doesn't mean it feels good to be rejected. Absolutely not. But every day, professionally, personally, putting ourselves out there is how we get to that best self. So taking that risk, even if you've been hurt before, informs the next choice. So do your own work, figure out what's going on with you. Coaching helps, right? It really does, because we make a plan for looking forward and using what we've learned in the past, but not getting stuck in it to do that work.
And I want to tell people, if you go to therapy and you're thinking coaching is like that, it's not like that at all. Coaching, as Sherry just said, is very forward focused. Therapy is in the past. Why did you make the decisions? What happened in your childhood to make you do this? Some people don't care about that. Now, I'm saying I think both are helpful, but it's an entirely different process.
It absolutely is. And I think both are incredibly important. I think in coaching, we spend some time figuring out where you've been to understand where you want to go. But the primary focus is what action steps are we taking to get there? And we'll hold you gently accountable in ways that you agree to get you there. And I see remarkable changes over the course of 6 months, even a year, in coaching work that people do.
Sherry, thank you so much for being on the show. I can't believe we're out of time, but I wanted to say thanks, and I loved our conversation.
I did too, and I think I just want to put in one more plug for intimacy, which is stay curious, ask questions, figure out your role in what's next and best, and take a step today and think about what's good for you and what might feel good, and you know, play around a little bit with your body and someone else's.
I love it. So edgy. Okay, thank you again, Sherry. Tell my listeners, if they like what they heard and they want to have a consult with you, where they can find you.
They should go to DearDivorceCoach.com. There are loads of resources there, and there's a Zoom consult, a discovery session. Hop on, let's meet. Tell me what's going on with you. I'll tell you what I do, and we'll figure out if there's a good intersection there. I look forward to meeting you.
Aw, I love it. And to my listeners, if you want to find Sherry, you can also find her in the Trusted Professional section of Divorced Girl Smiling, along with so many other wonderful, trusted, vetted divorce professionals like divorce attorneys, therapists, mediators, financial advisors, real estate agents, and more. You can also go there to listen to more podcasts, download my mobile app, read articles, or sign up for my free consult. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you real soon.